Sometimes teachers just throw out an idea of, this is what I saw on the news, what are you thinking? Because a lot of the kids don't watch the news. So it's a good conversational starter. So that would be something that would be easy for a first-year teacher to implement, free. And I would call that one of those activities that's a return on your investment. Some teachers feel like, ooh, I can't give up 5 minutes because I want to start on my content right away. But that's a return that you will get back because you'll have those relationships formed.
You're listening to School Me, a podcast for new and early career educators from the National Education Association, bringing you the advice you need to bring out the best in your students and yourselves. Here's your host, Rowena Shern.
Educators are integral members of the community. Their role is not just limited to classroom instruction, but extends to managing the well-being of their students, voicing their concerns to administrators, and providing feedback to elected officials. Here to talk to us about building relationships at every level of the community is Shari Collins, a semi-retired training specialist for Omaha, Nebraska. We're excited that you're here. Very important topic, building relationships. How can we do what we do without it? So Shari, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I've been in education for 33 years. I taught high school English 7th through 12th grade when I first started teaching, and then I switched to an inner city school district in our town. There I taught K-6 gifted, and then the last 6 years I've been working solely with adult learners. My area education agency is contracted with 66 schools, so we go out and provide professional development for any of those schools.
Give us a little insight. What made you become an educator?
I remember when I was a little kid, my parents had old wooden school desks in the basement, and I used to go down and play school. It was just something that I really innately just thought that is what I would do. I've always wanted to help others. That teaching piece runs through everything that I do. So it just is a natural fit that that's what I was destined to do, I guess.
It reminds me of like the one room schoolhouses that we used to see on TV when we were growing up. And
yes,
to think of the love and support that you saw from that space. And so how perfect for you to be discussing with us about building relationships. It comes easy for some people, but for others, it takes a little bit of work. How does one begin to really work and hone in on that skill of building person-to-person relationships?
I do believe relationships are the key to everything in education, period. Back to building community with your students, the pieces with bullying, all of it, I think, really goes back to the relationship piece. There's a lot of things that I did when I was in the classroom, just getting to know my students, learning their culture, their food, their realities, I guess, because in many cases, they were not the same realities that I had. So I wanted to be able to connect on what their personal lives were really all about, and then bring that into the classroom. So it wasn't something where they came to school, they had to live in my world. They could still live in their world when they came to school. So learning about their interests and then differentiating my lessons so they were able to feel proud of who they are, but have an opportunity to express that.
And looking at bringing the outside world inside into the classroom and using that as the mechanism by which you connect with your students, it's pretty powerful because it validates them and lets them know that they are important and they're a part of this community. Talk to us about some ways that if I'm a brand new educator and I come and I have my student teaching experience and that's my toolkit and that's my slate and I want to build more. What do you tell me as this brand new educator?
One thing that I've read a little bit about is called FFM, First 5 Minutes. And it's a time where students and teachers can just talk. And that's so important. That would be something really easy for a first year teacher to do. Sometimes teachers do that in small groups. Sometimes it's more of a larger group discussion. Sometimes teachers just throw out an idea of, this is what I saw on the news, what are you thinking? Because a lot of the kids don't watch the news. So it's a good conversational starter. So that would be something that would be easy for a first year teacher to implement, free. And I would call that one of those activities that's a return on your investment. Some teachers feel like, ooh, I can't give up 5 minutes because I want to start on my content right away. But that's a return that you will get back because you'll have those relationships formed.
Pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not necessarily a lot of planning around that, mm-hmm. because we know planning is a big part of the work that we do. And so really supporting them around that 5 minutes, the first 5 minutes, starting the day in a very non-threatening way.
Mm-hmm.
How powerful is that?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about a time when you were a classroom teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And as you talked about the return on investment,
mm-hmm.
where it paid off.
Mm-hmm.
Think of a time or a situation or experience you had
mm-hmm.
as a classroom teacher where that community relationship building piece mm-hmm. paid off for you.
I remember one student, and I remember the day vividly. It was probably 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And it was a little boy I had in a gifted class. So I only saw him 20 minutes a week. Obviously, I had formed a really good relationship with him because when I came back to school to see him on that day, he said, "I've been waiting for a week for you to come because I have something I needed to tell you." And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Well, my grandma died last week and there's nobody at school that I can tell." So it was odd that he had made that connection with me in just those little tiny segments of time that I had with him, where he saw maybe other people all week long, but he just didn't feel like he was safe or that he could make that connection with them. So that was a story, just an image that I remember thinking, I don't know what it was that he connected with me about, but obviously there was something there.
You use the word safe.
Mm-hmm.
What does safety feel like in your classroom?
Safety is important, as is trust in any classroom. I think one of the biggest pieces with safety that I think about with my students is non-judgmental. So I always wanted them to feel like no matter what had happened, what trauma they had experienced outside of school, that it was always a safe place that they could come. There would not be judgmental comments. And also the confidentiality piece is a big part of safety, that if they had something they needed to tell me, as long as it wasn't harming others, that they knew that secret was safe with me.
Because when we think of our classrooms and safety, and as you mentioned, they bring everything with them,
mm-hmm.
their community, their experiences, and we think about the diversity of our students.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to have a diverse classroom environment?
Actually, some of my favorite schools were my most diverse schools. I remember a day, just to go back and reminisce about things that happened, and it was a school that was very diverse and also extremely poor. And we were talking about famous structures from around the world. So I had been at an affluent school the day before talking about structures around the world, and kids could talk about their summer vacations. I went to Italy this summer, so on and so forth. So then I got to the school that was high poverty, and I posed the same question. Let's talk about famous structures from around the world that you know of before we start studying. They did not know. So I kept prompting. I kept rephrasing the question. I thought, they don't understand what I'm asking. But they honestly didn't know. And some girl finally said, "What about King Kong? I think I remember a movie with King Kong on a famous building." That's as close as they could get. And as she was talking, my eyes were filling up with tears, because that was that day that I realized that prior knowledge piece just isn't there. So they need us so much more than ever to help fill in some of those gaps. In the same token, it's the most fun and exhilarating buildings to be in.
And when you talked about filling in those gaps, we talk about leveling the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
How powerful is it, and what does it look like when we level the playing fields for those students,
mm-hmm.
in which we have to build their background knowledge
mm-hmm.
in order
sure.
to present them with the new instruction?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So just to go back to that example with architecture, we didn't have a lot of things in our school at that time. So I went to the school librarian. She had some extra budget money. And I said, how about we get some books in the library on this topic? My son was really interested in architecture, so I brought in things from home. I called architects in our community that had models, and they would come in and speak to the kids. So any of those things, just to fill in the blanks of information that just isn't there.
Sometimes some of the most simplest things,
mm-hmm.
reaching out to the community, because
right.
we have experts in a community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a new teacher, they probably need to know that you don't have to do everything.
Mm-hmm. Right. And those examples that I gave, all of that was free. It didn't cost me anything.
Think of that. Free.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We love free.
I think it's cornerstone to our profession.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to School Me. And a quick thank you to all the NEA members listening. If you are not an NEA member, visit NEA.org www.edu.com/whyjoin. How do we then, if you think about the conversation that we've had so far in creating a safe environment with diverse students, how do we connect their parents to engage them in the learning environment?
It's tough. A lot of our parents are working 2-3 jobs. A lot of our parents don't have access to the internet. A lot of them are mobile, so their addresses change if you want to send things through the postal service. So there are barriers there, definitely. One of our biggest successes at one of my most diverse schools is we started doing a lot of family nights where we'd bring the families in. We offered free babysitting in the gym with sometimes kids who had graduated from our elementary school and then were high school students at our feeder schools. Sometimes we'd bring them back to play games with the younger children. And then we would have like family math night, family literacy night. We always had pieces for them to take home. So we were a title school, so we would get books age appropriate. And then if you came, you got a punch ticket. We had a nice dinner, conversation, relationship building, and then you'd go into the classrooms, but you got to go home with things. So that was really, really successful, and we had really, really good turnouts for that.
And what was the impact on the classroom?
Of course, student achievement, yeah. We had a lot of parents then that could connect more with their teachers. And then when the relationship is their parent-teacher, they're a little bit more involved with their students. We also had a room that was called the Cafe Room, which is an odd name for a technology room. But we opened it up and let parents come in and use technology and print before school and after school. So that was another good like liaison where they just didn't have access to some of that at home. The school was their community in this school that I'm referring to. There was also a parent resource center where we had games and books in multiple languages, so parents could come up. There was always a pot of coffee on, so it was very friendly. And then that school also went into the free health clinic, so it became a community place also to come for free health care. So it served a lot of needs.
Sort of like a wraparound support service, or community schools is what we call them now.
You bet.
It became a safe haven and a hub for the community to support it.
And it was the really, really cool feeling. When I started teaching there, it would have been 18 years ago, there weren't a lot of parents in the hallways. But when I finished teaching there, we had so many parents there that they actually got the movie theater roping so we could make sure that they were at a safe space in the school setting because there were so many parents that would come, which is a great problem to have.
It is. It's total reverse of what we normally would hear.
There were so many things going right there. But I think it all went back to relationships.
If we start thinking of outside of the school building and how we can get support for our students to get, as you said, that return on investment and that safe environment for them.
Yes.
One of the things you mentioned was connecting with ethnic associations and culturally diverse associations that could potentially support you in a classroom. Let's talk about that in terms of lesson planning, the impact of being culturally responsive as we implement instruction.
With cultural competency, one piece that is really relevant to me is the gifted piece. So I have worked in gifted education for 33 years, and I follow a lot of the work of Dr. Ford out of Vanderbilt. And she estimates that there are over 500,000 African American and Hispanic students sitting in classrooms waiting to be identified as gifted. So that's just an angle that I'd like to also present to new teachers, to not to forget about looking across all cultures when they're making teacher nominations. Some of that goes back to implicit bias and stereotypes that a teacher might have. Some of the assessments given to test kids into gifted programming are biased. So we really have to rely on teachers to go with their gut instinct. And if you don't know a lot about gifted, I would suggest Google it and go online and find some characteristics. Because often the students who you see that are acting out are potentially students who could be highly gifted. Those behaviors you're seeing because the content is not up to what they need. So that's one piece that comes to mind when I think of cultural competence, just not forgetting those kids. Because if there's 500,000 across the country, it's pretty likely that they're in somebody's classroom that's a new teacher.
What does that impact on instruction look like once I am identified from being culturally responsive? Mm-hmm. What does that impact on instruction for me as a student?
So one thing I think is important with cultural competency is that the kiddos see themselves in the content. So if you do not have legends, myths, any of the cultural background materials, go out and check them out from a library. Again, we're not asking that you go out and purchase things, but those resources you can find for free in your public libraries. So make sure you have a lot of that exposure around the classroom. That's one of the really important pieces in my mind I see with cultural competencies.
Thinking of the work that we do as educators and thinking of the supports that are needed for student improvement, what advice do you give to the brand new teacher coming into Nebraska who may be working in a very rural area and sometimes they're not quite in close proximity to colleagues to make those connections? Mm-hmm. How do we do that as a brand new teacher?
Actually, the last 6 years, my experience in working with those mentors, I had between 350 and 450 every year that came through my program. And those happened to be in rural Iowa at the time. But a really good place for those folks would be to go to Ed Communities where they could virtually look for some resources. And I think we have around 60 paid positions by NEA that are putting out communities. So any of that would be good, the virtual resources. It is difficult when distance is there, but there are still resources that are available. I would say they'd have to go, instead of to a large city, they'd have to look for county resources. At least in Nebraska, that would probably be their best bet. Or go to Ed Communities.
And that would take care of the curriculum piece. What about the relationship piece? What happens if I'm in the middle school in a rural area and I'm the only math teacher? How do I connect with my colleagues in other spaces to help support the work that we're doing as educators?
For teachers who might be in rural areas, who may be a little bit distanced from resources in a large city, I would recommend for them to use all of the resources they can locate virtually. A lot of the good associations nationally, for example, a math teacher, I would highly recommend joining. It would be National Association of Teachers of Mathematics. For English teachers, join your organization. You can get so much material. Of course, there's a membership fee with that, but you do have access to a lot of really wonderful, top-notch resources. Many, many new educators go to Twitter for information. You can follow hashtags. That's a great way to gain information. And Facebook is another really good resource. You can connect with people from around the world. So if you're isolated, I feel like those would be good options.
How do I, as a brand new educator, create a space in which is safe, that I feel okay with you coming in to observe me?
One thing I would recommend for a new educator to do, if they want someone to come into their classroom, is to find one thing that they want that observer to focus on. Don't focus on everything. Don't be too critical. But if you're learning something about how to do a good engagement strategy with the students, have a colleague come in and say, I'd really love some feedback just on that engagement strategy. And then it also helps the observer or the experienced teacher to know what to look for as well. And then it's not as intimidating for the new teacher, because then they know they're going to get some feedback on the engagement strategy if that's what they're looking for, but not on every piece of the lesson. So it's not so overwhelming. So I think that might be a good place to start. Just narrow the focus. And then as you feel more comfortable with each other, then you can broaden it a little bit.
Just asking for feedback on one thing, mm-hmm. and focusing in on the one mm-hmm. thing. And I think that as veterans, sometimes we have to remember we can't overload with information. Mm-hmm. One last question for you. When we think about working with our colleagues as brand new educators, what do I do if I'm in an environment in which people are very different than I am? How do I build those relationships and make those connections?
Everything comes back to the relationships you have with people. So it's still ultimately making the connections. You still have pets in common. You still have family in common. Whatever the case may be, but everybody can find commonalities with every other individual. So regardless of what those other pieces are that may not be like you, you can still find something that you can connect on.
And you heard it first from Mrs. Collins. We are more alike than we are different. Mm-hmm. And if we meet each other on that place and in that space, we can get much more accomplished in seeing each other in our differences. Thank you so much for joining us today. We want to say we appreciate and value all that you do, because we know we couldn't do this work without you. And so thank you again. And we hope that you have a great, great school year. Thanks for listening. And if you haven't yet, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of School Me. And be sure to download the NEA Today app for NEA's member magazines and the latest education advice, tips, and news.